1057 WLGC presents Airing It Out. Now, here's your host, Drew Skaggs.
This is Airing It Out, broadcasting live from the palatial studios of 1057 WLGC, located two blocks from the always crystal clear Ohio River. Welcome to the juggernaut known as AIO, where we bring to you topical talk radio that is informative, ingratiating, instigating, invigorating, and infuriating emotions felt all at the exact same time. We can be reached two different ways over the course of the next 2 hours. The first, if you care to opine, 1-800-551-1057, or by going to drewskaggswithak.com if you just want to lurk. That's an internet term, isn't it? Lurking.
Yeah, it is.
That's cool, though. We won't know who you are. You come up as a ghost, right? Isn't it
That's
a ghost
right.
on our...
It is.
Yeah. Wow, we are topical talk radio, so there's a lot of topics to talk about. The show is jam-packed. Robin Webb squeaked by in the special election yesterday, and the squeak by is the operative word there. Nobody expected it to be that close. 282 votes is what she won by, and we're going to talk a little bit about that. And somebody died. Ted Kennedy died today, the lion of the Senate. It's the press refers to him as the lion. Not L-Y-I-N-G. It's the lion. L-I-O-N. And yeah, I got to tell you, the press coverage is just nauseating. You know, and it's nauseating for this. He is the standard bearer, or was the standard bearer until he assumed room temperature today, of what the press believes in. Liberalism. Big government. The bigger, the better. More liberalism, the better. And so they are going to celebrate his life because they think it was a life that was fantastically led. And you can tell. But how I found out was the Rick Porcini... Patino. Did I say Porcini? That's the restaurant, right?
Yeah.
The Rick Pitino press conference. Did you see that?
I didn't. I missed it.
He calls a press conference, okay, 3 o'clock. Calls a press conference. That goes out to the media. Coach Pitino's going to have a press conference. Now, naturally, with everything happening, people start wondering, well, is he going to step aside? Is he going to take a leave of absence? No. Do you know what he did? He calls a press conference to whine about the press coverage of his dilemma that he finds himself in, and he does not even see the irony that I could tell of calling a press conference to complain about the press attention. He basically said, "Leave me alone. She's lying. Everything you've heard is lies, except from what's come from my mouth." Media guys, quit it with the story. Turn the channel. Get off the TV, quit reading the paper. They're all lying, except for me. And he brings up the fact that, Ted Kennedy died today. And there's more important things. You called the press conference, Coach. It was beyond bizarre. A buddy of mine was texting me about it, and I went back on and online and found it and watched it. Just a bizarre press conference. You're shaking your head. What was that about?
It was an automated phone call thing.
Really? The election's over with.
Yeah, it wasn't an election thing.
Oh, really?
Some kind of telemarketing thing or something.
You know, there's a thing you can get on to get away from the...
Yeah.
I'm just saying.
I know. I think we need to do that here.
Yeah, I think so. I think that'd be a good idea. But let's start lighthearted. Daily Independent, Dateline, Louisville. Flatwoods home to pizza magnates, former car.
I like pizza.
Who was that again?
Man.
No.
Ugh.
No. I like pizza.
There we go, Homer. Thank you. People at car shows often joked that Jeff Robinson's 71 Camaro Z28 was the car used in commercials by the Papa John's pizza chain. It certainly looked the part. Had the paint job, the rally stripes, and the mag wheels. Did you see a picture of it?
I didn't.
Very cool looking car. It was cool. Quote, they didn't know how right they were, Robinson said Tuesday. He spoke by phone from Louisville, where he'd just delivered the car to chain founder John Schnatter. Is it Schnatter?
I don't know.
I've met the guy. I should know. In return, Schnatter handed Robinson $250,000. The $250,000 was the bounty that Papa John Schnatter, I'll just call him Papa John, that sounds better, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Had offered in a quest to find the car he sold more than 25 years ago to finance his family's tavern and ultimately his own restaurant venture. Papa John launched a national search for the car, dedicating a website to the quest and fielding thousands of leads. The car, it turned out, was in Robinson's Flatwoods garage. He bought it in 04, worked on it for about 18 months, planned on keeping the car for years, he said. Yeah. Well, that went by the wayside, didn't it? So the Kentucky Division of Motor Vehicles clinched the deal, took the car to Louisville on a trailer, spent Tuesday saying goodbye to it. It wouldn't take me long to say goodbye to it. I'm just saying.
Not for that money.
No. I just say, okay, see ya.
Yeah.
It's exciting, but kind of bittersweet. I really like that car. The $250,000 is enough to get him a pretty nice set of wheels. He's planning on it. Maybe a Camaro because I like them so well. Hey, he can buy a lot of Camaros. Aren't they making a new Camaro?
I think they are. Yeah.
Like for 2010, isn't it?
So. Yeah.
You know, I don't. I don't think that's a very fuel efficient vehicle.
Probably not.
Myself. That's just my own personal opinion. I don't think that it is. By the way, Jeff Davis is going to be joining us at 7 o'clock, tentatively scheduled to call in and talk about things. Dateline Olive Hill, Robin Webb outpolls Jack Diddy barely.
Oh, put me in cold. I'm ready to play today. Put me in cold. I'm ready to play today. Look at me. I can be Centennial.
Democrats picked up a seat in the Republican-controlled state Senate Tuesday night in Kentucky as Democrat State Representative Robin Webb, a guest here Sunday evening on Airing It Out of Grayson, narrowly defeated Republican Jack Diddy, a guest here on Airing It Out 3 weeks ago, in a bitter election, special election for the 18th state Senate district. She won a closer-than-expected race, outpolling Diddy by a margin of only 282 votes. Independent Guy Gibbons finished a distant third with 953 votes. We had Guy Gibbons on here 2 weeks ago.
That's right.
Yeah. Now, I have had phone calls all day long talking about what went on with the election from every conceivable side of this election. And the number one thing that I hear is Diddy would have won if Gibbons hadn't been in the race. Gibbons gave the race to Webb. To which I have always responded, no, he didn't. He had just as much a right to be in that race as anybody else did. It matters not that he, I mean, you still got to have the majority votes, and Jack Diddy didn't get them. No matter about Guy Gibbons at all, he was in the race just like the other two were in the race. You got to win the votes. He didn't win the votes. Now, what you do is if you, playing armchair quarterback here, looking back, if I think Guy Gibbons, the independent, is going to take votes from me as opposed to my candidate, then I'm going into his district where he's strong and I'm making the case knowing that this might potentially hurt me. I don't know if Jack did that or not. I have no idea. But it is what it is. Robin won the race. The voters who knew me best turned out for me the most, Webb said to her supporters at Carter Cave State Resort Park. It was an expensive, often bitter race. Both candidates are expected to have spent more than $250,000. And each side, I thought John McCain was going to take money out of politics, wasn't he? Didn't he? He said he was going to.
I think I heard that
somewhere. Yeah. And each side and their state parties ran bitter personal attack ads. Webb said she was, quote, validated and vindicated, quote, by the unquote, by the win, and said the race was hard on her family, especially her children. They've had to endure, withstand things no child should have to hear. They threw everything at me and more, but I'm still standing with your support. That's red meat. I mean, she's throwing what red meat to her supporters. Robin, yeah, come on. Jack Diddy's kids didn't like hearing what was said about him either, yeah, to be honest here. And it cuts both ways. If you'd say that, then I would say, you know, good on you for acknowledging that both of the campaigns got a little bit crazy with the personal attacks and the mudslinging. It wasn't just one-sided, as anybody that's lived in this district for the last month knows. That's the one thing I've heard from this election is it is disgusting. I can't believe these ads that are being run. But like I said, and I've always said, the reason these things are done is because they work. Now, it was just not one-sided. Mud was slung by both camps. And, I wish she would have acknowledged that. But she is the state senator. She kind of did. And she said a lot of the accusations on both sides really just gets aggravating, said Elizabeth Bailey of Grayson. I just don't like it. Webb said she understood. Twice during her victory speech, she apologized for the tone of her campaign, saying she'd endured it in past campaigns and saw it coming this time. I don't know what that means. That doesn't mean anything. That's a sentence that makes no sense. It's a run-on sentence. It is.
Yeah.
I mean, what does that mean? It doesn't mean anything. I wasn't at the victory celebration. Congratulations to Senate elect Webb on her election. The interesting thing is going to be 2010. Jack Diddy going to run again? I have no idea. I haven't asked that question. I haven't pursued that avenue at all. 2010 is a long way away. This election is just past us. That is going to be interesting to see if he decides to re-up for another run, because this one was, oh, so close.
What? Shake your head. You know I'm right. You can't blame me.
I know you're right. It's just not the kind of story I was expecting.
Well, you know, there's a lot of things that you just don't expect. I was thinking that the Ted Kennedy, the Camelot, you know, end of Camelot. And, you know, the one way you can look at it is it was the high water mark for the Kennedy family. So, anyways, I'm not feeling good. Still, Dateline Tulsa, new meth formula avoids anti-drug laws. This is the new formula for methamphetamine. I'm going to give a formula for meth. Like they don't already have it.
Be careful.
A 2-liter. This is an AP story. A 2-liter soda bottle, a few handfuls of cold pills, and some noxious chemicals. Shake the bottle, and the volatile reaction produces one of the world's most addictive drugs. Only a few years ago, making meth required an elaborate lab, containers simmering over open flames, cans of flammable liquids, and hundreds of pills. I mean, I want to do that drug. The process gave off foul odors, sometimes sparked explosions. Okay, we know that. But now drug users are making their own meth in small batches using a faster, cheaper, much simpler method with ingredients that can be carried in a knapsack and mixed on the run. They call it the shake-and-bake approach. It's become popular because it requires a relatively small number of pills of the decongestant pseudoephedrine,
yeah,
otherwise known as Sudafed.
Yeah.
An amount easily obtained under even the toughest anti-meth laws that have been adopted. Maybe we can buy Sudafed again now. I mean, I've had this sinus infection for 2.5 weeks, and you go to Walmart, or you go somewhere to buy this stuff, and it's fast making me a libertarian when it comes to drugs. You know, the liberals... legislation every 2 years going through Congress. It is racist. We shouldn't have to show driver's licenses to vote. You shouldn't have to show them. Nope, we should be able to just go right up there, and you ought to be able to vote because that's racist. You shouldn't have to show them. But you got to show a driver's license to buy Sudafed. And once again, liberal logic just falls flat on its face when applied to something commonsensical like this. I mean, maybe they're going to go ahead and just ban Sudafed entirely. Is that going to take care of the problem? No, they'll go find something else. Man, the only effective 12-hour remedy for my congestion has been this stuff. Because it's not been Ledford.
So what I guess what they can do is maybe start banning 2-liter bottles also.
Yeah.
Because right there, environmentalists will be happy. You get rid of the evil plastic.
Right.
You know.
Well, if this whole sugar tax goes into effect, it's not far off anyway.
True. The fat tax.
Yeah.
No, you can't call it sugar tax. It's the fat tax. But it just astounds me that these goofballs up in D.C. want legislation that you don't have to show a driver's license to vote, but you got to show one to buy Sudafed. Makes no sense to me. But that's just me. The president's on vacation.
Yeah.
Did you see this?
I've heard that, yeah.
Have you seen when he went on vacation? He sent back messages to the press pool. Leave me alone. Not going to be making any news this week. Leave me alone. Leave my family alone. Don't take pictures. Did you hear about all this?
I have, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. So what has he done? He's appeared every single day I've heard him. Haven't you?
Yeah.
Every single day I've heard the guy. When right. He's supposed to be on vacation, no news happening this week. Does the thing with the terrorist outfit. Some new... super secret, super duper unit out of the White House, which I'm sure will be really super duper run out of the White House. So you got that. You got the other things that, and of course, Teddy today. I mean, go on vacation already. You're listening to Airing It Out.
Vacation time for the Obamas. Vacation rich, white folk get away. Vacation in a no poor folk zone. Vacation out at Martha's Vineyard. Vacation nice, you can get away. Vacation, you know I can't afford one.
You're listening to Airing It Out with Drew Skaggs.
At 7 o'clock, at the very top of the second hour, we are going to be joined, tentatively scheduled to be joined, by U.S. 4th District Representative Jeff Davis. I guess he's in Kentucky, isn't he? Thank God they're not in session anymore.
I guess he would be.
Yeah, I guess he'll be calling from somewhere, from the Commonwealth, I would assume, unless he's up taking care of business in D.C.
Be at Martha's Vineyard or something.
Yeah, Hyannisport. Dateline, Yahoo News, specifically Boston, United States Senator Edward Kennedy assumes room temperature, dies at age 77. Our official Airing It Out Ted Kennedy theme song now has been retired. Last time we played right there. Yeah. It's held us in good stead over the years, hasn't it?
I think so.
Yeah, I think so too. U.S. Senator Edward Kennedy, a towering figure in the Democrat Party, who took the helm of one of America's most fabled political families after two older brothers were assassinated, died at age 77. One of the most influential and longest-serving senators in U.S. history, and I might add, a walking, talking billboard for term limits, a liberal standard bearer who also was known as a consummate congressional dealmaker, had been battling brain cancer, diagnosed May of 2008. His death marked the twilight of a political dynasty and dealt a blow to Democrats as they seek to answer President Obama's call for an overhaul of the healthcare system. Kennedy was a longtime advocate of health care reform, a signature issue of Obama's presidency. Obama made some sort of comment. I don't know. He was on vacation and still made a comment, which I guess is A-OK. Yet colleagues and staff said he remained determined to fulfill what he called the cause of my life. Providing health insurance to all Americans, he helped draft legislation to overhaul the $2.5 trillion U.S. health care system. Kennedy's interest in healthcare dated from his son's bout with cancer in the 70s. More recently, he cited his own illness as he made a case for reform. I've benefited from the best of medicine, but I've also witnessed the frustration and outrage of patients and doctors alike as they face the challenge of a system that shortchanges millions of Americans, said Kennedy prior to his death. Let me ask you this. Do you think Ted Kennedy got the best of the best care?
Oh, sure.
Absolutely he did. And do you think Ted Kennedy wanted to extend his life? Absolutely he did. But yet, the universal health coverage plan that he wants for everybody else, who is not the same
as Ted Kennedy got. Now, the thing that was, I knew the media would have a love fest about it. I mean, there are certain things in life that you know. And they've been teeing this thing up for a year since Teddy was diagnosed with brain cancer. They've had the obituaries written. They're just waiting to wait and sitting on go to go with the glowing stories of Teddy Kennedy. He's going to be buried at Arlington next to his brothers. Now, a lot of people have said that's outrageous. He never served in the military. He was not a president. He shouldn't be buried at Arlington. Give me a break. Hey, you know, listen, if he wants to be buried next to his brother, bury him next to his brother. You know, it matters not to me. I think that's a ridiculous thing to be talking about. But as if on cue, Robert Byrd, senator from West Virginia, put out an emotional statement at the Politico.com, where he said, quote, "In his honor and as a tribute to his commitment to his ideals, let us stop shouting and name-calling. Have a civilized debate on health care reform, which I hope when legislation has been signed into law will bear his name for his commitment to ensuring the health of every American." And the media has just run with it. The Democrats, the liberals, they're going to redouble their efforts here to get universal health care in honor of Teddy Kennedy. As if universal health care is a Make-A-Wish Foundation thing for Teddy. He's one singular person. There's 300 million of us that are going to be affected by this universal health care. And yet, they're going to use him as a rallying cry to pass universal health care. I got news for them. The majority of Americans don't like Ted Kennedy. I know that's going to come as a shock, because the Inside the Beltway people, they think he walked on water. Well, faux pas there. The majority of people don't like Ted Kennedy. He was for many things. He was for the continued expansion of government, of big government. He was for the expansion of the welfare state, as big as he could get it. He, along with a lot of his cohorts in the late 60s, did not have any backbone when it came to Vietnam, when we were winning in Vietnam. And it was politicians like Ted Kennedy that caused us to lose Vietnam. So he was many things to many people, but not exactly as the media is going to portray him for the next week. And it's the same thing as the Wellstone thing that happened 4 years ago. When they tried to get up there and say, you know, let's take back the House and Senate for Paul. It's the same thing happening here. Chris Matthews. The guy, I mean, there's idiots, and then there are idiots, and beyond that we have Chris Matthews. Seriously. This is the guy that said this about President Obama.
"The feeling most people get when they hear a Barack Obama speech, I felt this thrill going up my leg."
Yes, thrill going up his leg regarding President Obama. He was on Today, the Today Show, this morning with Matt Lauer and some other info babe. I don't know who's the Today Show girl now. You got Ann Curry, I know that,
yeah.
But she's not one of those. She's Ann Curry's got to be upset.
Yeah.
The perky Katie leaves, and she's still in the same spot that she was. Is it Meredith Vieira? Is that who it is?
Yeah, I think she's on there.
Yeah, so I think it was Meredith on there. And they're talking to Chris Matthews this morning. And he basically almost breaks down. But right at the end of what he was talking about, he said this.
"The Kennedy commitment to civil rights was almost accidental. It began because of history, 63 and Martin Luther King's march. By Bobby, it became passion. By Teddy, it became real. And then Teddy turns it over to the first African-American and says, you got the ball. Amazing history. Barack's now the last brother.
That's it's a very history. Interesting point to
it's
make.
History. And he was the great brother.
Barack's now the last Kennedy brother. What is it with these people? You know, everybody conveniently forgets that Maya Angelou, poet laureate of our country back when William Jefferson Clinton Blythe Clinton was our president. She was the poet laureate of the country. She said he was the first black president. Remember that?
Yeah.
Bill Clinton, first black president. And now Barack Obama is the last Kennedy brother. Rose Kennedy sure got around, didn't she?
Yeah.
You got to be kidding me, Chris. The last Kennedy brother is Barack Obama? What it is they are so upset at the end of this political dynasty. And it's not ending. It's not ending because what's going to happen is... it's like royalty in Great Britain. The king is dead, long live the king. Or something like that. Or Kennedy Queen in this case. Because his wife, or his niece, or his nephew, they're going to jerry-rig it in Massachusetts so that... See, what happened was, when Romney was governor, a dastardly Republican, of Massachusetts, they rigged it so that it had to be an electoral victory. You couldn't name a replacement. Guess what they're doing in Massachusetts now?
Naming a replacement?
They're wanting to change the law in order to name a replacement. And guess who it's going to be? I mean, it's going to be, as I said, his wife, Victoria Reggie, his niece, Caroline might have, take up residence in Massachusetts, his son when he gets out of rehab. John Adams is just rolling over in his grave. I mean, as I said, I quoted Byrd to begin with. And you've got Ted Kennedy, who has been in the Senate since, I believe, 1962? Yeah, I think he's been in there 47 years. 47 years! I'd love to see some limit. I mean, I'd love to see some term limit stuff come out of this. How about the Byrd Kennedy term limit bill? That would be great. But, that's not going to happen. So, they're upset because the Kennedy legacy is, as they see it, the Camelot, the last grasp, the last tenuous rope to Camelot has now been broken. And they don't know what to do with themselves. They're going to take up the charge on this universal health care. They're going to say, let's do this for Teddy. Let's do it. Teddy would want this. Well, you know what? If you want a memorial to Teddy Kennedy, build a statue. Rename Hyannisport Teddyville. All right? But don't force unwanted legislation upon unwilling citizens. No matter what Robert Byrd has to say about the tone of the debate. So they're going to put Ted Kennedy's name to it. That's what they want to do. Is it going to be called the Sink or Swim Bill? Now listen, I want to ask you something.
Yeah.
As soon as this news broke, I got emails that said, Skaggs, we really need to hear the Valentine's Day phone call between Jeff, that would be you, right, and Ted Kennedy. It has become a tradition here on Valentine's Day.
It has, yeah.
And so if you give the audience what they want.
Right.
Yeah. So this was Jeff, what was it, a couple years ago?
Yeah.
Conversing with the now newly assumed room temperature, Ted Kennedy, and we're going to take this right into the break. You're listening to Airing It Out, 1-800-551-1057.
Senator Kennedy, thanks for joining us on Airing It Out, and thanks for taking the time to talk with us.
Always a pleasure.
If you were a tree on Valentine's Day, what kind of tree would you be?
Let's see. I guess I never really thought about it. I guess a Scotch elm. Hold the elm.
That's a good one, Senator. You got any gift ideas for the guys out there?
Well, flowers. Flowers are always good.
Ah, yeah, the old standard. So what kind of gifts would you avoid?
I try to avoid all water-related products.
So the Democrat Party has been traditionally known as the party of minorities. Do you have any tips for our African-American listeners?
I never know what those people like. Well, I can't think of any, but I can ask my Senate colleague, Big Mac Osama. I mean, Balak Pastrama.
You mean
Obama bin...
You mean Barack Obama?
Yes, that's him.
Okay, so finish this sentence for me. My ideal woman has...
Gills, no vocal cords, and a low tolerance for alcohol.
Okay, what did you say?
Oh, that was out loud, wasn't it? I do that sometimes. Scratch that.
Okay, and this concludes our interview. Thank you for your time, Senator.
No problem. Thank you.
You know the irony of it, of wanting to name your health care bill after Ted Kennedy. It's ironic. Name your health care bill after somebody who ate too much, drank too much, like a fish, and generally abused his body on a regular basis. I mean, if you want to go ahead, fine. Name it after him, but bury it with him. This is not going to give you the momentum, although they're going to spend the next week trying to get this momentum. Let's do it for Ted. It's not going to work. Because he wasn't as well liked out in flyover America as he was. Huh?
Jeff Davis is on the phone with us.
Jeff? He was so anxious to call in, he decided that he wanted to call early. Hey, Jeff.
Hey, actually, you're on my schedule for 6:45.
Oh, that's fine. Hey, listen, we're ready to go no matter what. Anytime you call in, Jeff, we're willing to take your call. You know that.
Maybe we should view it this way in a more of a heartland sense. The government shows up when you don't expect them and not necessarily when you want them.
That is a very good point. I'm not used to having high government officials call me out of the blue like this. With me on the line is U.S. 4th District Representative Jeff Davis. You doing okay?
We're doing well. I've been back in the district. Being back in the heartland is a nice place to be after the madness of Washington, particularly through the climate change and the health care debate. The last few weeks in July, in the run-up to the adjournment, was one of the most amazing times I've ever seen for cynical politics, particularly the standpoint. What made me so excited was the way Americans across the country of every political stripe are waking up and understand that this isn't even a Democrat or Republican issue anymore. This is about the government reaching farther and deeper than it ever has in our history, and folks are rightfully concerned about that from a variety of perspectives.
You know, when you say mad world in D.C., it reminds me of Mel Brooks's It's a Mad, 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 Mad World when you said that, because that's exactly what it feels like to us out here in flyover country, your constituents, and the majority of constituents, if you believe the polls, which I do, across the country. When they look at this thing, they don't want anything to do with it, no matter if Ted Kennedy's name's attached to it or not.
But people who actually read it and who understand anything about the private sector are generally horrified when they begin to see what it is. And the bigger issue when we look at this, and especially my concern is for senior citizens, when we begin to look at the number of senior citizens who come out on the tail end of this, and we're talking very seriously, it's in the bill, about $500 billion worth of cuts in Medicare support. We're talking about a huge tax increase. And every indicator that I see, and we know we need reform. That's the thing that's frustrating, is that this is simply going to make government more complicated. By creating 53 new federal agencies and boards, we're not going to increase access to health care. We're going to increase the cost, the complexity, and frankly, limit the capacity and create a rationing care system by default. I don't think that's the intent of anybody, but that is necessarily what would have to happen.
Well, and with any socialized medicine program, across the world that's been tried, the end result is rationing.
Exactly. We do a lot with in the world area of women's health care and rural health care, and I think really when we talk about some of these issues in the English system, we should ask the 4,000 women who had to give birth in the hallways, laboratories and offices as opposed to delivery rooms in their medical system because of a lack of capacity. And there's a rising voice coming from the United Kingdom, not from socialists, mind you, but from medical practitioners, nurses and doctors who are very concerned about these issues. And really, there are a variety of areas that need to be reformed. We need to reform and redesign the process of how Medicare and Medicaid work. And principally in Washington, we found $160 billion that's consumed every year simply by bureaucratic overhead for compliance that could be cut without changing. That assumes changing the D.C. end of things, not the delivery for our senior citizens. And what that would do is reduce that cost that gets passed on to taxpayers and private insurers. It would help us address the issues with our health care providers. The second issue is we need real insurance reform. The big insurance companies that create problems, especially for small businesses, we've seen what a lack of competition does in Kentucky in the 90s. I saw my rates go up 400%. And when HB 250 passed, back then, and many companies simply dropped their coverage for their employees because they could no longer afford it. And we were able to work out some arrangements to do that, but again, it cost us literally the price of additional employees coming on board in order to keep our health coverage for our team members. And we need to allow interstate sales of health insurance. We need to allow broader competition. We need to mandate that pooling sizes can be worked and protect new innovative products that really work, like health savings accounts, and IRA-like types of things that we can use to give people more personal control over their healthcare decisions. And finally, liability is a huge issue. And Mrs. Pelosi and President Obama refuse to address that. And until we do that, it doesn't really matter what anybody does. Costs will continue to skyrocket on that issue alone because of defensive medicine issues.
Well, you know as well as I do, tort reform is never going to be on the drawing board, so I agree with you there. But, you mentioned health savings accounts. If you combine that with a high-deductible health insurance plan, along with an HSA, it seems to me, and then you equalize the tax laws so that the employer-provided health insurance and the individually-owned health insurance have the same tax benefits, because then you've got an employer health insurance benefits. They're fully tax-deductible right now, but individual health insurance is not. That immediately.
Your proposal that you're talking about, when you do it, it actually works. The objection to that that comes from third parties, ultimately from the insurance industry through different activist groups, is simply because the average insurance health insurance company makes a 20% net margin after everything, while everybody else is scraping by. These myths that doctors and hospitals are rich is simply that. It is a myth. If you go in and look at the costs that are associated with the factors that I mentioned, we can cut this out. And how I know that, there are numerous medical practices popping up around the country that don't take private insurance and they don't take Medicare and Medicaid. They're working basically on a cash and carry basis. There are several pediatric practices in Northern Virginia, and basically what families have to do is they pay $50 a visit, and it's cash and carry. They are booked out for weeks and weeks in advance for acute and chronic, or acute and wellness care. And here's the issue related to that is those families, to your point, can carry a catastrophic plan separately for their children.
The high deductible.
All of a sudden, the expenses drop off.
Right, the high deductible, which is where when you have a health savings account along and in conjunction with that. That can roll over like a 401k. Then, what you have is the ability, if God forbid something happens where that needs to kick in, and you've got a high deductible, you at least have money put aside that will cover that high deductible. Going forward, you mentioned a couple different things that caught my eye. You said $500 billion in Medicare is what's being bandied about to be stripped.
You know, I remember all the elections that were run in the 80s and 90s about how Republicans are going to steal your Medicare. They're going to take. They're going to cut Medicare. Who's the one cutting Medicare?
Well, actually, the President of the United States.
Thank you. Yeah, he is.
Actively advocating for that right now.
And there's three or four. You said a bill. Isn't there three or four different bills floating around?
Actually, there are three Republican bills. There are a couple of Democratic bills, but they've been various members who want to introduce different legislation in the Democratic Party have literally been asked to suppress those bills to avoid conflict with the core legislation, which has created some real challenges. We can do, and this is the thing I say over and over to folks, there is so much change that we can really bring that will save billions of dollars. We can increase access to health care. We can increase quality of health care. We can actually reduce wait times and increase doctor times by applying principles and technology, but it's going to mandate not making the government bigger. It's going to mandate changing the way the government works to make it more effective. You know, it's no different than NASCAR. A race is won in the pits. If you had a pit crew that mandated that there were 100 people you had to hand the tool to sequentially before it could get to the car, I don't think that's going to be a competitive racing team.
No.
You want to do it as fast as possible, but that's the way government works. We're adding layers. We're adding czars to cover dysfunction in the government right now, and instead of fixing it. So you have 40 czars that, in effect, are working around 16 cabinet officers. You see what I'm saying? It continues to grow. We take that out, and we can give more flexibility to our local providers. I know many doctors, and I'm not going to mention anybody by name because folks might be come poking around it. They give care for free, and that technically is not legal. But the reason they give it for free to the poor is because of the, and to many elderly, is simply because it's so complicated for them to try to get reimbursed for individuals. They'll write off a lot of costs. Our largest hospital in Northern Kentucky wrote off $25 million in costs roughly last year in free services that they gave out. And so my only point on that is it's being budgeted into the overall context. Let's look at the different categories of uninsured, of which there are several, and then deal with those core issues as unique individual programs, and we can do this. That's what's so frustrating to me as a business and systems professional coming into this. Many members on both sides of the aisle see the solutions to this. They are begging for the opportunity to bring real process reform, but the speaker has shut this down. The administration is moving very, very clearly towards a European-style system. And the result of this, were it to become law, is very dangerous for the country. I mean, it takes us away from being a republic if this were to go. And I don't mean that in any kind of a panic mode. It's more of the fact that if we look at what the role of the government does, it supersedes completely the rights of the individual. And that fundamentally goes against what this country was built on.
With me on the line is Jeff Davis, U.S. 4th District Representative. Jeff, let me ask you this. Town halls are all in the news. Are you having one?
The only thing I did was a rally the first week back during the recess out in Lewis County, and we had over 100 people show up for that. Healthcare was the principal topic. We talked about a number of other things, including a state special that was going on over there. But I have to tell you, the message was overwhelmingly positive for us. The message from the folks there was, don't let the government take over our healthcare. After that, quite frankly, and we weren't expecting this to blow up, I've had a joint that was completely shot to pieces. I think it all started with too many air jumps when I was a paratrooper in the Army, but 30 years of running and everything else, and I had to get it replaced. So I went in for surgery on the week of the 10th, and I'm recovering from that right now, just starting to get back to work where I can get a little bit mobile.
So a little
the staff has handled a lot of calls. We're doing a lot of aggressive outreach across the district regardless. And frankly, I'm glad that I can pick who my doctor is.
Yeah, that's exactly right. But I think it's fair to say that your constituents are against this universal health care as it is in its current form.
Absolutely. It's overwhelming. I want to say one thing up front. There are a lot of rumors that fly around about, particularly from liberals, want to talk about the special congressional health care program as if we're treated like some kind of nobility. Maybe they've got that over in the Senate. You'd have to ask the senators for that. But I can tell you that I'm on the same health plan as an employee from the IRS or anybody who works down at the federal building. I pay a significant component of that, and it's with Anthem Blue Cross. And frankly, the benefits that I have are less than what I had in the private sector coming in. You know, that being said, we felt that the hypocrisy of what was being forced upon people against their will, trying to run a 1,500-page bill by members of Congress and frankly, pass the American people in a week without any real oversight on that and chance for national dialogue has fueled this. And so we offered an amendment in the Ways and Means Committee during our markup that would mandate that all members of Congress have to be on exactly the same government-run plan that they want ordinary Americans to be on. And the response of that was from the chairman of the Health Subcommittee, Pete Stark from California, said that that would be unfair to the family of members of Congress to force them off their private coverage they're satisfied with onto a government-run plan, to which the response overwhelmingly of our members on the committee was, isn't that the whole point of this debate? As opposed to changing the whole nature of this, let's reform the system. And the fact that liberal leadership, Pete Stark, Charles Rangel, with the demand, frankly, of Nancy Pelosi on that, killed that issue that would make their members live under the plan they want to make Americans live under.
The main thing, the main point that it seems like the galvanizing phrase out there is public option. Is the public option dead?
No. And we're going to have to fight this thing all the way to the end. Here's the real issue. The newest argument, and I just laugh sometimes from the lack of private sector experience of many of these very, very smart political people in the White House. The new spin phrase that Rahm Emanuel has pushed out is to say that, well, it's no different than the post office handles your mail, right? We've got FedEx, UPS, and the post office.
Right.
And so healthcare can be the same way. Well, I have to tell you, the reason, and this is nothing against postal workers in the post office, there are a lot of dedicated people that work very hard on their routes. There's also an intransigent, inefficient bureaucracy that's back in Washington, D.C., along with the rest of the government. Here's the issue. UPS and Federal Express specifically started from nothing with literally one airplane to haul stuff and are one of the largest businesses in the world, because they could compete more effectively and deliver better service to their customers than the Postal Service could. And frankly, I would rather maintain that private control, because what do you have with a Federal Express or a UPS? You have total control over that decision, over the quality of the delivery. There's a refund policy, and it's a closed loop. It's a great system, and that's why they're so wildly successful and have grown so much over time.
Yeah, and to take that even further, the United States Postal Service has a monopoly on letters.
They're the only ones
that you can send a letter through, and they still lose money.
Well, and there are a lot of reasons for that, and I don't want to get into
that.
Well,
sure, the chief reason is the fact that it's a government program run by bureaucrats. That's the chief reason. I don't want to put words in your mouth.
Well, if you look at it in the healthcare perspective, and I come back to this issue of individual consumer choice, the president has already backed off his statement that if you like what you have, you can keep it, because it has become abundantly clear that you're not likely to keep it if you put every business in America onto a plan, and there's a phase-in program starting with small businesses over time. That basically, what it will end up doing is, I've heard executives, I've heard all kinds of folks, I've heard even union reps say the only thing that's smart to keep a company alive is to get off the private benefits. If it's only 8% and you're paying 17% of your revenue for health insurance, the government is underbuying. And competitively speaking, to stay in business, companies will end up being forced to shed their benefits to do that. And it's kind of a blackmail-type system that would ensue. But here's my question to anybody listening. You can get a bypass operation in 3 days if you walk into the ER at King's Daughters Hospital with a problem. The average wait time is 18 months in Canada. My only question is, why do so many people from other countries come to the United States to get their health care? Why is there such a flood into Michigan and into Massachusetts, and into New York State in particular, of Canadians who are coming over to get procedures they don't want to wait a year or a year and a half for?
Did Ted Kennedy go to Canada?
Go ahead.
Did Ted Kennedy go to Canada for his health care? No. No, he got it right here.
Regardless of your politics, you know, he was an institution, but I'll tell you this. He was born to the manor. He was born into a fabulously wealthy family that continued to make money during the Depression. And he has not had to feel that pain or those challenges with the rest of us who basically had to work our way up to the middle class from being, you know, starting with modest means. And in my view at this point is you've got to come out and look at it in the field and understand these choices. And the real providers who are on the front lines are not part of writing this legislation. But if you follow the money, you can find lots of people who are going to do very well through this.
No, absolutely.
And they're not the American people.
I had, this past weekend, I talked to three doctors that are Canadian. Excuse me. And practice here. And they can't believe that the American people, and this administration, I don't want to lump the two, but this administration is trying to run a Canadian-style healthcare system through this country. They were just astounded. And the horror stories, which I'm sure you've heard.
And the one thing I will say about Canada, it's not that doctors are not professionals, that nurses aren't committed up there. You're dealing with a system that limits access to quality care. And because there's a smaller amount that can be made cost-effective within that system, people wait or people die. If we look at the cancer survival rates in Great Britain, which is often touted as a system by folks on the far left, the death rate for prostate cancer discovered at any time in America is 51%. That means that if you're discovered early, you basically have almost 100% cure rate in that. It's 91% overall. For prostate cancer. In England, it's 51%. That means one out of every two people die. Likewise, you know, before, as we wrap up here, the thing I would share with you is breast cancer is similar. It's 80-some percent in Great Britain, or in the United States, for survival. It's in the, it's about 60% in the United Kingdom. And again, it's the waiting periods and the ration care that cause that problem. And I think that if that's considered reform, I'll say no to that, and I'll keep what I've got. If we're going to do real reform, we can actually improve the quality and reduce the cost. And that's the one argument that has been absolutely refused to be heard by the administration.
Well,
a legislative liaison from the White House came and met with me, and they wanted me to vote for the plan. And I said to them, I said, if you put the three things that I've been talking about for years into that plan, you've got my vote. And the response was, well, that's not the direction we're going. And I think that speaks for itself.
Yeah, absolutely. I know it's going to be a tough slog when you get back there, you know, but slog it out. We don't want this. And I can speak for the majority of my audience, and you see the polls, you know, and I know with the passing of Senator Kennedy today, they're going to redouble their efforts because of this, to have a Make-A-Wish Foundation and for Teddy and get this health care bill through in his name. Please hold the fort. I'm trying to think of a good military term. Stay in your foxhole and keep your perimeter out there. Keep the claymores out in front of you.
Well, we're going to stand firm, and I appreciate every citizen who's gotten involved in this process. I appreciate that involvement. Those who are willing to get into these rallies, I appreciate that, and I really encourage anybody, regardless of your perspective on this, go online, read the bill. If you read the bill, you'll begin to understand the concerns that I have immediately on this. It is not what it has been advertised to be. It sounds good, but if you read it and you study it, like in the Bible, do what the Bereans do, see for themselves, and challenge their own assumptions, and you'll, I think, come up with the answer that you're looking for. Maybe not the answer you're looking for, but you'll find the truth.
Well, Jeff, we wish you a speedy recovery from your own health issues, and look forward to getting you back to D.C. to fight the fight.
Well, I'll tell you what, I want to get back on the ground, and we're going to be back in Washington after Labor Day and ready to go for it. So appreciate it, and you all have a great good one.
Best of luck to you, and we'll talk soon.
Thanks.
Bye-bye. All right, take care. Bye-bye. That was U.S. 4th District Representative Jeff Davis. You're listening to Airing It Out. I need good insurance. Do you know why I need good insurance?
Why is that?
Because my kids have started playing football.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. But see, it's they're not in pads yet.
That's another good reason to have insurance.
Yeah, because they had their very first practice. They're actually having practice right now. And I'm sure they're just blowing people up. I mean, just, you know.
Yeah?
Yeah. But the first practice was Monday night. And it was fun, you know, to sit there and watch them get down in a three-point stance, which they have no idea what a three-point stance is. The coaches were doing a wonderful job. And, you know, my one verbose son was constantly saying, yeah, no, listen, I want to play quarterback, or, you know, listen, I want to play wide receiver. And, you know, he doesn't understand it just yet, although I've tried to tell him the coach is going to let you know where you're going to play.
Right.
It's up to the coach. Of course, I went to the coach afterwards and said, you know, my kid's not playing enough. So, you got to start that. You got to start that right off the bat.
Yeah, you're like the typical parent.
No, I'm not. I did say that, but it was with a laugh and a smile.
Okay.
Yeah. So we're I'm watching them play, and this one kid breaks off a big run, and I've got one of my kids on offense and one's on defense.
Oh.
Yeah. So the play is over with. And, you know, I'm not paying much attention, and I hear my kids' names being yelled, and I look, and about 30 yards down the field, they are just wallering each other. I mean, one's tackled the other one, and, you know, the other one took umbrage to it, and as normally, you
right.
know, and just thumps him back. You know, so I need good insurance in case something comes of that, because, you know, listen, yes. I was, they're soon to be seven, but I was 8, 9, 10, 12 once also.
Yeah.
And, you know, just, and times that by two. And that's what you got with me. So I didn't know Jeff was injured.
No,
was hobbled.
Yeah, I didn't know.
As it were. What did he say? He said, was it his knee?
He didn't say. He just said a joint that he was having problems with. He didn't say which one it was.
Well, you pretty much have joints where on your knees and your elbows, right?
Well, every place that your body bends.
As a joint? Is it?
Yeah, I mean, your fingers, your arms, your wrists,
you know,
elbows.
You really should have gone into medicine rather than radio. It was a toss-up for you, wasn't it?
Yeah, I could have made more money doing medicine.
No.
Until this whole healthcare thing.
Right, passes. Now. See, now you're glad you went with the radio.
Right.
And I'm glad that
yeah,
you went.
Yeah, you'd
with.
Had somebody else over here pushing buttons, and you wouldn't know what's going on.
Yeah, I'd be lost.
You still don't know what's going on, but
no.
you don't fear that right now.
I don't. I don't fear that at all. And it took me a while to get over that. A couple shows.
Yeah.
I really don't fear that at all, because I just have one job, which is just to do this and not cough so much.
Right. Scary thing is, you kind of trust me more than most people should.
You think?
Yeah, you know, you let me throw in the sound effects and stuff.
See,
sometime.
I know. See, but you step up to the challenge.
Yeah.
See, you've been challenged. People respond when they're positively challenged.
Yeah,
and that's what we do here. We try to challenge everybody to think.
That's right.
Think for themselves.
Yeah,
and to have an open mind to what we opine about. And when we get back from the break, we were talking to Jeff Davis about the town hall meetings. And one of our favorites, quickly becoming our favorites, right up there with Rosie, and right up there with Rosie is Janine Garofalo, and she has an interesting take, to say the least, on those of you that disagree with universal health care coverage. You know, one thing we've got, and I appreciate this in our listeners, is humor.
You're right.
Yeah, you know.
Yeah.
So we're talking about a joint. And naturally, we're talking about a health care, you know, as it applies to your body.
Right.
And I believe he said, you know, that a joint is not necessarily in your body.
Right.
I understand. I understand where you're, and I got a good chuckle out of it.
Right.
But it eventually does wind up in your body.
Yeah.
Of course, not if I never inhaled. See, so. Sometimes it winds up, in most of the time, or so I've been told. So
yeah, that's what I hear.
Yeah. So Janine Garofalo, okay. Have you seen her lately?
No, not really.
She is has become a poster child for hepatitis. I mean, you really should. I mean, it's she's scary looking. She's one of these hysterical hippie lefties that has made it big out in Hollywood. God knows how. But she's completely gone off the reservation. And, you already knew that she wasn't a fan of conservatives because of the stuff that we've played on here before. Or anything right of center. Or anything center. I mean, she's so far left, it's not even funny. She was on that that wonderful network known as Air America, the liberal network that just, I mean, it made money by hand over fist. It made so much money it went bankrupt. So she was at this this club in D.C. on August the 21st, and she was doing a stand up, and this is what she had to say about those of us that. Protest and disagree with universal health care.
Do you remember tea baggers? The tea party people? It was so much easier when we could just call them racists. I don't know why we just can't call them or functionally retarded adults with their cries of, I want my country back. You know what they're really saying is, I want my white guy back.
So we're functionally retarded. They sure throw that word around a lot for the people that are supposed to be the champions of the underprivileged, and so politically correct. They throw that term around a lot when it comes to describing conservatives. And she said it is, I want my country back, is code for racism, which the racism card is still being played, and still being played constantly. If you disagree with this president, now you're racist. If you disagree with the policies that he's pushing. But as with any lefty, when you can't have a reasonable debate and you cannot defend your argument, the next thing to do is to start calling people names. That's what she did. Go ahead, call us names. I don't care. Because I know who I am and what I am about. There's no racism. There's limited government. Give us back more of our money. Calling us names and racists isn't going to work anymore, Janine. Because the people are wise now. We have wisened up. We no longer put stock in the names you call us. You've gone to the well far too many times with the race card. Now, using their theory of racism, what does Janine Garofalo, a white actress, know about racism? Because after all, the only one that can talk about racism are not whites. And she is white. She's a white lady that looks like she still hasn't started bathing regularly, but she's still white. And we're getting really tired of being called these litany of names. Harry Reid called us evil mongers last week. Let's see if I can find that. Harry Reid, who is in his own trouble, in his own state, down double digits before 2010. Did I throw that away? I think I threw that away. Harry Reid called those that protest evil mongers. And we've heard racists, evil mongers, un-Americans, hate mongers. All these names being lobbed at us. And she says, I want my country back is code for racism. I bring you to Howard Dean III back in 2004. When all through that campaign, he talked about how the Democrats were going to take back the country. and even produced a tape on it, which said which was entitled "Do You Have the Power? How to Take Back Our Country and Restore Democracy in America." Was that racist back then when Howard Dean said it? No, of course it wasn't. Because it doesn't cut both ways with people such as Janine Garofalo. And she went on further and said, "I want my country back." Janine, you already have the country that you've wished for. Liberals control everything. The presidency, the House, Nancy Pelosi, she's the leader, she's a liberal. Harry Reid, the Senate, he's a leader, he's a liberal. And you've got the mainstream media as your mouthpiece. And you've got Hollywood and all you types out there, Janine, doing their bidding. It's already here for your socialist nirvana. Why are you so upset about a few racist hayseed naysayers ruining your America? Relax and enjoy the fruits of your wonderland. Janine, now run along and see if you can find a bar of soap, honey, and please use it. But really boil down to this: redistribution. If you're not for it, you're a racist. It's not going to work anymore. It's not working. And the more they realize it, the more shrill they get, and the more crazy they start acting. Who did you get a call from? You were shaking your head and talking, and
oh, that was our friend, our joint friend.
Oh, did he find that funny? Did he?
Yeah, he did. Yeah. He enjoyed it.
Well, you know, listen, I just said earlier in the show that I'm fast becoming a libertarian when it came to the drug policy in this country because of my sinus infection with this Sudafed. And we had that story about the meth heads. Now I've discovered this new great, better way to, I don't know, better, I don't, what's the word for it? New way to to produce their drug.
Yeah.
And they can do it by not have. They can still go in there and buy their Sudafed or whatever. I don't want to say Sudafed. It's Sudafedrin, isn't it?
Right. Yeah.
Yeah. And I made the point that it's amazing. You've got people in Congress that want to be able to have people vote in elections without a driver's license, but yet you can't buy Sudafed without a driver's license. Now, how much sense does that make? Which is to say, it makes no sense at all. Laws, whenever laws, whether it's from Congress, I mean, that people are going to break laws, they're going to break laws. And you can throw up some more one. It was with 2 liters. You can try to ban 2 liters. They'll get around it again. The war on drugs is just not going anywhere, especially when it comes to Sudafed. At least in my opinion. But anyways, you know, Garofalo is going to end up in a rubber room, you know, yelling, "I'm not insane. It's you. Everyone else. Everyone's insane. Fascist." I mean, that's where she's going to wind up if you've ever seen her. A nut job. And I know you're going to be shocked here. Do you know who her, I guess it's kind of a dual thing. He is a host of a very low-rated show that they're big buddies. She's on it all the time.
Bill Maher?
No, not. But I'm sure she's been on Maher before. I've seen that.
Yeah?
Olbermann.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. She's on Olbermann all the time. As if she is a some sort of expert on this stuff. When in reality, the fact of the matter is, she's crazier than a can full of planters. And yet you got these people out here putting her up as some sort of expert on universal health care. It's amazing to me. It really, really is. But you notice Jeff did not take the bait when I when I said, you know as well as I do, Jeff, what's happening here. What's happening is with Ted Kennedy assuming room temperature, they're going to take that and make it like a Make-A-Wish Foundation.
Yeah.
For Teddy, even though he's assumed room temperature, we're gonna make his wish come true. For this one person, and we're gonna ram healthcare through, and screw the other 299,999,000 people, and 999,999. Right? Did I get all of them? Except for the illegals.
Yeah.
Well, they're in there too.
Yeah.
Yeah. So they're all for that. He didn't take that bait. He didn't take that bait at all.
No, he didn't.
Yeah. What did he call him, a statesman?
I think he might have.
Yeah. Well, he was just being a. He was staying above the fray.
You have to, when you're a public official, I guess you kind of have to show some respect.
I'm glad
even
I'm
if
not.
You don't agree or not, you know?
Yeah, I'm glad I'm not. Yeah, you know, because I'm free to say what I said tonight about Representative Kennedy and Senator Kennedy. I'm just gonna have to stay away from the news for the next week. Because what is he? He's being buried Saturday, right?
I haven't even seen it yet.
Huh?
I haven't even seen it yet. I don't know.
I think he's being buried Saturday at Arlington National Cemetery. And we retired the theme song, our Ted Kennedy theme song. Won't play that anymore. We'll play the Valentine's Day thing because every Valentine's Day, that's going to be like a blast from the grave. Ted Kennedy coming back to talk about Valentine's Day.
Yeah.
Or as they say in Argolite, Valentine's Day. And the reason I said Argolite is because of the Bunny Ranch?
The Possum Ranch.
Yeah. Yes. Hey, you got to tell Justice that's hilarious. you got to give him kudos for that. So we've retired that. We've not retired the Valentine's Day interview that you did with Senator Kennedy before
that,
he assumed
that was a fun day.
Well, yeah, I think he had been hitting the scotch, but listen. Que sera, sera.
Yeah.
He led a good life, I guess is one way to look at it. However, we're going to have to retire one more thing. Do you know what that is?
No.
With regards to Senator Kennedy, as we go to the break, asked for comment, Mary Jo Kopechne had none. This Sunday, I will be on special assignment. Thus, it will be a show of Jeff's choosing. That he chooses to replay here, as I said, special assignment. It'll be fun. It's going to be a fun assignment. I don't mind telling you, but I will illuminate you as to what I'm doing this Sunday evening on Wednesday.
Right,
so a week from now.
You better have some good gossip about
it. It'll be fun.
I know what it is. I can't say it.
I know. Don't you think it's going to be fun?
I think it'll be great.
You
better bring us some good news about it.
I know. I'll probably bring you some good news. I'll do that.
Yeah.
It's going to be a lot of fun, and I'm looking forward to it. So the next live edition of Airing It Out will not be this Sunday. It will be next Wednesday. But we will have a taped version of the show this Sunday. Time for the world-famous Stupid Stuff.
Oh, how come things that happen to stupid people keep happening to me?
Dateline, Lexington, Kentucky. Men face charges after Smokey and the Bandit test drive.
He's pounded down, loaded up and trucking. Are we going to do what they say can't be done? We've got a long way to go and a short time to get there. I'm eastbound, just watch no bandit run.
Great movie.
Yeah.
Speaking of, that was a Camaro, wasn't it?
I think so, yeah.
Or was that, it wasn't a Grand Prix. No, it wasn't a Grand Prix. That was a Camaro.
I think it was a Camaro.
Very cool. The brown.
Yeah.
Two men were charged Thursday afternoon with impersonating a public servant after they took a used car for a test drive. Another cash for clunker story and employed the vehicle's siren and lights to clear motorists out of their way. Jonathan Hunter, 21, and Joshua Parker, 23, were taken into custody after taking the car for a test drive from Tri-City Auto. Paul King, general sales manager for the car lot, said the two took a 1993 white Ford Crown Vic with emergency response lights and a siren for a test drive. The car had come from a dealer auction in West Virginia. King later learned the two had used the car for 45 minutes to, in his words, play Smokey and the Bandit. He didn't know the equipment on the car worked. Two did not physically get out of the car and confront any other motorists, but they are accused of using the car's emergency response equipment to clear traffic and talk to other drivers through a public address system. It happened on New Circle Road, Meadow Lane, and Floyd Drive. Well, I mean, it was on there.
Yeah.
He was just, they were just talking to other
motorists. That sounds kind of fun.
Huh?
That sounds like fun.
It does sound like fun. I think that would be a blast. Until, of course, you you got arrested.
Yeah, that wouldn't work.
Yeah, and I had a buddy of mine just text me, said, you can't have a stupid stuff without mentioning the Patino press conference. I've already done that, haven't I?
We have.
So the first segment, we've had two stupid stuff segments.
Yeah.
Haven't we?
We have.
Yeah. Dateline, where is this? New York Daily News. Surly man dressed as Sesame Street character hassles Times Square tourists.
This is the song, la 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 la, Elmo's song. La 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 la, la 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 la, Elmo's song.
I like it.
La la la, la 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 la.
Elmo no like tourists, tightwads, or photographers. At least that just brought back just horrific memories of about my kids when they were a year and a half listening to that, Elmo. At least a rogue version of the lovable character hassled passerbys outside Planet Hollywood. The dirty and creepy character demanded money from people, and when he didn't get it, swore and jostled them. Sounds like Congress. Let me read it again. The dirty and creepy character demanded money from people, and when he didn't get it, swore and jostled them. Sounds exactly like Congress, doesn't it?
Yes, it does.
Yeah. No picture. You have to tip Elmo. You have to tip Elmo or Elmo gets angry. He shouted as he stuck a filthy red paw over a Texas tourist's camera lens. What the hell, Elmo? Keep your hands to yourself, shouted Victoria Vaught, pulling away wide-eyed at the loud to-do. Vaught's son Dylan Four said, what's wrong with Elmo, Mommy? That's not the real Elmo. That's a bad Elmo, she quickly explained. The explanation stuck because any kid will tell you the real Elmo, a furry red monster with large white eyes and an orange nose, is very upbeat and giggles a lot, and he's clearly not grungy. So, Kurt Cobain the real Elmo does not like Kurt Cobain.
Right. I guess not.
Yeah. Friday night's cut-rate imitation nearly got his orange nose bloodied by Ken Ross, a 32-year-old insurance agent from New Mexico, after he grabbed at Ross's camera. It's just a picture. Don't be rude. Don't touch me. I will hit you, said Ross. The phony's temper finally got the best of him when a Daily News reporter and photographer tried to find out who he was. He lunged at the photographer but came up empty and then apologized. Look, man, Elmo needs to make a living, too, he said. That is great.
Yeah.
Elmo, panhandling. Bad times are here again. Dateline, New Haven, Connecticut. Walmart worker accused of beating boss with bat. This is where I couldn't find the Robert De Niro in The Untouchables when he was going around and he was using the bat. Do you remember that?
Oh, yeah.
You remember that scene?
We
could have used it here. Kind of bloody, though. Police in New Haven accused a Walmart worker of beating an assistant manager in a store aisle with an aluminum baseball bat after getting reprimanded for the second time in a few days. They're still trying to find him. Said the worker grabbed the bat off the shelf and hit the assistant manager nearly a dozen times after he was written up for poor job performance. Said he suffered a possible broken arm and many bruises. And it was closed to shoppers at the time.
Wow.
What? They close? I thought it's like Bourbon Street at every Walmart location across the country.
I didn't know
they closed.
I don't know.
But listen, if you hit a guy a dozen times with an aluminum and all you do is break one arm, come on. You know that guy was hitting last in the lineup in Little League.
Yeah.
Huh?
Yeah.
Wussy. Dateline Atlanta. Fake flyers promise free food and beer at mayoral candidate event.
Good
gonna end up eating a steady diet of government cheese and living in a van down by the river.
Atlanta mayoral candidate Lisa Borders said someone created fake flyers promising free food and beer at a scheduled block party she held Saturday, and said the flyers were distributed to a homeless center in downtown Atlanta. That is great. Is that, that's hilarious.
That is, yeah.
We are deeply, I should say this with the proper, we are deeply saddened that another campaign would use the most vulnerable members of our community in an attempt to disrupt our event, said Stacey Abrams, campaign manager. Abrams said the old-fashioned style block party was meant to thank volunteers, current supporters, and encourage others to join Borders in her quest to become Atlanta's next mayor. The event, however, did feature cotton candy, popcorn, shaved ice, hot dogs, hamburgers, and entertainment.
Wow.
You don't want homeless people to have candy? Cotton candy, popcorn, shaved ice, hot dogs, hamburgers, and entertainment?
Guess not.
I guess we know who the real people are against the homeless. Huh?
Yeah.
The ones that showed up there, and they probably blocked them out of this party. Probably. Said, you're not allowed in here. By misusing our logo and handing out these flyers, they misled men and women who have faced more than enough difficulty. So, somebody was running against this candidate in Atlanta, and she has this block party where she's going to, you know, have all this stuff and kick off her campaign. So they make fake flyers that say, "Hey, free food and beer at the rally." I think that's classic.
Yeah.
Isn't in the words of Chris Farley.
You're going to end up eating a steady diet of government cheese and living in a van down by the river.
I think that what Farley was talking about there, that was the demographic they were after. That's why they went to the, yeah? I'm so heartless sometimes. Yeah. I can't help but think that's funny. Do you think that's odd? I think that's funny.
I think it's a little funny.
Just a little?
A little bit.
Yeah, well. We do have our disagreements every now and then, and obviously this is one of them. So as I said, the next live edition of Airing It Out will be this Wednesday, 1 week from today, at 6 p.m. However, we will have a best-of version of Airing It Out this Sunday at 5 p.m. We hope that you'll tune in then, but hold the calls until next Wednesday evening. As for this evening, thanks so much for listening.
You've been listening to Airing It Out with Drew Skaggs, a presentation of the best country, 105.7 WLGC.